Hello and welcome to the Dorothy Project. I'm Alice and each week I spend about 25 minutes getting to know another woman like me who's found themselves in gay male society. This week it's the delightful Liv Morris, who is one half of the multi-award-winning cabaret act Bourgeois and Maurice. Liv and her mate George formed Bourgeois and Maurice on a bit of a whim back in 2007, and things have really escalated since. As a duo, they've released 4 studio albums, made a web series, a podcast, numerous theatre shows, and they've also won Time Out's Alternative Eurovision competition twice. I wanted to talk to Liv about what feels like a really classic combo, the relationship between a straight woman and a gay man, about making art together and what they both bring to the party, and about whether having a baby has changed things. George, who is the other half, how did you guys meet?
We went to university together. So we studied together at Royal Holloway. But we weren't really friends particularly, actually, at uni. We became friends in the final term, really. We had lots of mutual friends and we were sort of in the similar group and we studied basically the same thing. But then when we graduated, we moved in with 2 other friends into London, into Queen Lanes, Stoke Newington, not far from where we are now. And we lived together for a year and we became a lot closer friends during that time. And then we moved into different houses, but we were good friends. And that house that we lived in was it's a classic first house you move into in London. It was pretty grim. The boiler kept breaking. We were broke. We didn't know what we were doing in London. We had no money. We were just to pass the time, we'd, just make up songs when we, at home, whilst we were drunk and getting stoned and all that. That's the way you do in your carefree 20s. And so then we, about a year or so later, George really wanted to perform. So a friend of his who was running an open mic cabaret night, George signed himself up to just do something, needed to do something. And then I had a moment at work in a job that I didn't want to do and was like, this is not my life, I don't want to do this. So I just messaged George and was like, oh, you know that cabaret night you're doing, can I do something with you? Because I don't know what, but I just want to do something. He was like, yeah. And so then I'd play the piano. He was like, do you? I've only 3 years, I never knew that about you. I was like, yeah, I haven't really done much recently. And so then we were like, well, we used to mess around with songs when we lived together, let's write some songs. And then we did the first show, and that was it, really.
Well, that really escalated.
Yeah, completely. Really out of control.
Amazing.
It was fun, yeah. Because it was, and I think the thing that was nice about it is we really did do that first performance and no agenda. We never did it right. I want to make this. I want to do this. I want to make this work. I want to be this. This is what I want to do with my life and career. We just got up on stage to mess around because we were bored and never thought we'd do it again. Not that we wouldn't, but just never we'll do this again. And then there was someone from Time Out there at the time. They had a section in Time Out called Nightlife. It used to be called. I don't know if you remember it. And the kind of head of that, the writer for that, was in the audience. Oh, we liked your show. Can I interview you? And so she interviewed us. I know, literally done one show. That was our first ever performance on stage. And one of the questions was, when's your next gig? I don't have one. I don't have another gig. So we called up a friend who ran a music night, basically, a straight sort of indie music night in Covent Garden. We were like, can we come and do that? We've got to put down, we've got another gig. So can we do that? So we went and met. He's like... Yeah, quite straight indie bands, and then Bourgeois and Maurice came out and sang some songs about Ritalin, I think. And then we were like, well, what is going on? And then it just went from there. And someone else was at that gig and said, oh, I've got a venue, do you want to come and do some night, and blah, blah, blah.
So you're just kind of pushing it open doors in a
way. Yeah,
Because I was going to ask, when you talk about your process, what do you think you both kind of individually bring to the table?
Yeah.
In terms of...
God, that's a really good question, because we worked together so long. We sometimes feel... I had a baby 18 months ago, and so when I had her, we took time off, obviously not very much, but some, and it was so interesting to do and really good because we'd worked together for such a long time that we'd become so enmeshed in our process and in the way we do stuff, and we hadn't really done anything creatively outside of Bourgeois and Maurice. So having Joy was a reason for us both to go, oh, okay, let's just pause Bourgeois and Maurice and see what else we can do. And that was amazing. George was in a show by Claude Ensemble recently, and he started working with another guy called Matthew Poxon, and they're developing a show about songs from failed musicals, which is amazing.
Amazing. Yeah.
He did it at Brighton Fringe a couple of weekends ago. I couldn't see it. I've seen little bits along the way, but it's brilliant. It's all these like amazing like West End and Broadway absolute flops and like the songs from it. So anyway, so he was started doing that. I guess I was just being a mum, really. Yeah. Just like busy mumming.
It's not really a job.
Yeah. It's pretty tiring. But it was really nice having some time away from each other in that way. And then when we came back to carry on working on this Insane Animals project, I really felt like enlivened again. And I think, what do we each bring to it? We work in a very similar way now, but I think people always assume, because I play the piano and George sings, people often assume that like I write the music, he writes the lyrics, but it isn't like that. It's very 50-50 because we write together. So it normally starts with like a corn of an idea from one of us, and we'll just develop it. Like, and he'll sing melody, and then I'll just figure out what the chords are of that. But he writes the songs as much as I write the lyrics.
Yeah. So. What do we bring?
It's not like an Elton John. No, in the same room.
Because I was talking to Amy Zing from Sync about having a baby, because obviously she had Raffi, and like, I think if you move in sort of queer circles and you work in the arts and nightlife, it's something that is not automatically something that people do.
Yeah.
And I was wondering kind of how you found that. Like, did it feel like a step away or into a different world?
Do you know what? It really didn't. Like, I found, like, as much as I have completely with the queer sort of an LGBTQ, like, nightlife scene, it's always been the most genuinely supportive and, like, nurturing. And actually, I can't imagine having a baby and having a more traditional lifestyle and how you do that. Like, imagine if when I went back to work was going into like rehearsal room with my best mate and sitting around and writing some songs. Like, and I was like, oh, I'm actually going to be late because my mum's train's delayed to get Joy. So he's like, oh, no worries. Like, it's all flexible. Whereas if I had to be somewhere in an office at a certain time, same days every week, that would be really challenging, I'd find. Because I have flexibility and I'm the sort of master of my own time in so many ways. I think it's actually easier to be in this world. And like night time is like, because we gig at night time, but that's not so bad because Thomas, her dad, my partner, will have her in the evening and then I'll go and do a show. So often if we're doing like a later show, I can actually put her to bed and then go,
because it's that time, yeah, isn't it? The early evening that's actually really
it's
difficult.
Actually so I found it really supportive. And actually most of my friends who are gay or non-binary or trans or whatever, it's not like they don't like children, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like there's anything stranger about, they're brilliant, they love it. They're like, bring Joy, let's hang out. Like, I've got this amazing photo of like when Joy was about 4 or 5 months old and I went to see Johnny Woo and John Sizzle at the Glory, and then we went to the park, and they were having a planning meeting. They're like, I'll just come to the park. So we were sitting and it was a really nice day, and I've got a photo because Joy's basically got no hair, she's completely bald. So there was like Johnny, Sizzle and Joy, they're all three of them completely bald. I was like, she's got the uniform, look guys, she's part of the management team. It's like, yeah. And so they like, yeah, they, it's always been, uh-huh. I've always found it, yeah, pretty. And I, with our money situation's always not, being self-employed, you take time off to have a baby, you don't earn any money. And so like George was able to get other work. So he was like, don't worry about, like he took a little bit less money from Bosch and Reese whilst I took a bit more, like even in the last month. And it's like, how many people would do that? Like, because he's just understands. He was like, I'd rather you pay yourself and carry on and be able to do Bosch and Reese than not. So
that's amazing.
I know. Yeah. It's really amazing. So, yeah, I think that it's great. I really didn't take very much time off, to be honest. I was back on stage within 5 months I'm back in working with George within 4 months. And I had a meeting in Manchester and took Joy when she was 2 months old.
Wow.
So I never really felt like I stepped away because, yeah. I mean, I just couldn't. Like, it's a bit of both. Like, I didn't want to. Like, I was found that I was ready and I was very lucky. Joy was pretty, I didn't have many troubles. I was, breastfeeding was fine. I didn't suffer from any postnatal depression. She was a pretty good sleeper from very early on. So I didn't, my partner's really supportive. So he would be up with her. And so I was lucky. I had the setup that I could do that.
Yeah.
I never felt too much like I stepped away. Sometimes I find it strange now, I think, where I see lots of like stuff going on that I'm not at. But to be honest with you, I was ready for that anyway, I think. Like, it wasn't, I don't.
You feel like you've done what you needed to
do. I'm 36 now, so I was 35 when Joy was born. It's like, I had a good 20s and early 30s. Like, I don't feel like I missed out on any sort of fun.
And like running things like, you know, a queer performers network.
Yeah.
Like, as a straight person,
yeah.
Like, I DJ at a gay club, and that's what I find really interesting. Like, do you think you can kind of make queer art as a straight person?
I think it comes with some kind of caveats. One is that I work with someone who identifies as queer, so George brings his experience as a lived experience as a queer person to the work that we make, which I think is important. I'm not suggesting that my kind of privileged hetero experience is the same. So we use, but as a result of our collaboration, we do create work as Bourdon Reese that is queer and has a queer voice and tone to it. And in the same sense, we make feminist work that my voice and my experience as a woman brings to that. And I think there's so much, with intersectionality, feminism and queer voice, I think there's a lot of crossover. With it. So I think that, I would definitely define the work that Bourdon Reese make as queer. And I feel like I am part of the community, but I am very careful that I never, put myself in a position where I'm speaking on behalf of people or that I'm suggesting that I know stuff about a lived queer experience that I just don't know. So the Queer Performers Network was definitely something that I was a kind of organiser of and facilitator, but not the voice or the person, even the face of. It was just like, I'll send some emails to get some people in a room. And that is, because I'm part of this community. I think that there's definitely caveats along the way. But I think that, the queer community is so... It's so open. It's so welcoming to everyone and everything that it kind of doesn't. It brings you in and doesn't care what you are or who you are. So that's amazing. I still think that it's really important that there's space for. We can't let the fact that I'm part of it then become the voice or the like. And we need space for actual lived queer experience that can only come from lived queer experience. I definitely feel like I'm part of the community. I hate the word ally a lot. I really find that a problematic word.
Tell me about that. What do you find difficult?
I find it because there's ally. Like, I know that, I mean, it's semantics really. So, it's all by the by. I feel like it's like giving like praise and credit to someone for being just like a genuine, just like a normal, decent human being. Why are you not? Actually, it's not an ally. I'm just a human being nice to another human being. Why is this like, it feels like straight people like put this like prize on themselves. Like, I'm actually really good because I am like talk to gay people. It's like, I'm an ally. It's like, you're just being a human being. And if you don't do that, you're a bad human being. Like, that's the only thing here. It's not like, ally is like, and it's strange. But I understand where it comes from because it was a war. I mean, it still is sometimes, I think now, with the lesbian couple being attacked on the bus, it's like, Jesus Christ. And it was a fight. And so, that word coming with comradeship and like being on the battle with them. I kind of understand that, but it just, I don't know, I find it's praising straight people too much.
it's an upsettingly low bar, really.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
But yeah, and I think it's interesting as well, the other thing that some people have talked about is like queer as a sort of political category, and obviously yeah. you've done pieces like Middle of the Road. Like, do you feel like you kind of have rejected the sort of mainstream? Do you think part of that's bound up in it? And
Yeah, definitely. I think that our queerness doesn't just come from the fact that George is a gay man. It comes from the fact as well that with the work that we make is as these kind of, the characters of Bourgeois Maurice are kind of outsiders, and they're looking on and they're prodding the, you know, like convention and institution and power. So that's where our kind of queerness comes from as well, which I do have, you know, a voice in that. And that's where there's a lot of, you know, crossover with feminism as well. Mm. So we're kind of upsetting the patriarchy and just questioning, like, and trying to subvert, you know, societal norms. So I think our queerness in a political sense comes in that way. And we certainly reject mainstreamness. And that show, Middle of the Road, was just one big joke about trying to be mainstream and absolutely failing. But not to kind of be snobby about mainstream, because I think that there's a need for lots of different types of work. And actually, you know, we do some shows sometimes, and like compared to other performers, we're like, we are so vanilla. and we actually over the years we've actually become quite not. I don't think we've actually changed what we do. It's just that people have become more accepting of what we do. Like, you know, the way we look on stage used to be really quite confusing for people to begin with. It still is in some situations, but I think drag has become more like seen. I don't necessarily think we are drag, but we obviously use elements of drag. We still have and this is what we do, and we play with this, that the way we look, people don't necessarily expect us to then do like a song about examining British values and like British identity post-Brexit, because we look like we're going to be sort of glib and bitchy and silly. And that's the sort of thing that we're playing, you know, that is what we're playing with. We're playing with the superficial look and the kind of substance underneath. But I think that still is challenging for people. They expect, oh, you're just supposed to be like, you know, tell bitchy jokes and then get on with it and do a pop song. And we don't do that. So I think that there's a queerness in that as well, like taking, like even subverting what the expectation of like gay or queer people on stage is.
Mm. Yeah, you're so right. And also the expectation of like femininity in yeah. general, you know, people who present very feminine, and then nobody or lots of people still don't expect a sort of incisive, like political,
yeah.
you know, analysis to come out no. of that person no. just because they look fluffy or
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
glam or whatever.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, what would be your favourite moment so far, or one of your favourite moments of your life as a Dorothy? What would sum it up?
I know, I was thinking about this. I mean, it's like, it's so difficult to narrow down to one moment, because I really feel like it's completely my life. like it's my friendship group, it's my work, so narrowing it down was really difficult. But I've got this one thought, which is kind of like not really a memory because it only happened here like 6 months ago. But basically, when it was my daughter's first birthday, and like we don't have christenings or anything like that, so like the first birthday kind of becomes this moment where you like celebrate what you've done in the last year and the fact that they're here and blah blah blah. So my partner and I were like, where can we do it, we haven't got any money, we haven't got any space in our flat, like what should we do? And I was like, oh, I'll just ask Johnny and Sizzle if we can have the glory. And it was like a Sunday, they were like, oh yeah, it's fine, it is open from 2, but yeah, you can have it, just like have an area, no worries. So we like got in there, my mum made some food, Thomas made a playlist, and we got there and the bar staff like, oh yeah, we'll set it all up for you, da, da. And so I was just like, and it was Christmas, because she was born at Christmas, just before Christmas. And so the glory was like all done up and all its finery and all that. It was like literally perfect for a kid's party. And then Jade Adams dressed up as Santa. And so we got presents. So my friends and the kids like Jade Santa, and then get presents. And then it was like some of the glory regulars started coming in at about 4 p.m. and going, what's going on? And we're like, yeah, it's fine, come in. And I just thought, that's like, I mean, some people might say, oh, that's heteronormativity taking over our queer spaces. Or you could say it's like my friends and my community accepted like me to come in and they supported it. And it was like perfect. And it was, you know, and like loads of other performers and like queer performers were there just to say happy birthday and all be part of it. And I was like, this is why I love this. This is why these are my friends, this is my community, because this happens, it's like perfect. So yeah, I think joy on Jade Adams' knee as Santa in the glory. It's like
her first birthday pictures are going to be so much better than our friends when she's older.
Yeah, exactly.
She'll be like, well, that's a very famous drag queen.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Lovely. And then the last question I ask everyone is to nominate another Dorothy who you think I should speak to.
Yeah, so I've actually was thinking of two people. One is Rachel Porter. I don't know if you've... She's in Figs and Wigs.
Amazing. So they've performed at Push the Button, which is the club night I DJ at.
Right.
So I have seen them on the stage and admired them. Yes. So tell me about her as a person.
Yeah, so Rachel is amazing. She's in this troupe, Figs and Wigs, but she's also a, you know, individual performer. And she's just brilliant. She's very, very, very funny naturally. And she's just like friends. She's a party girl as well. She's friends with everyone. And she's such a genuinely lovely person. She's just one of those people that just knows everyone, connects everyone, and just is really brilliant. And makes completely weird work, like utterly bizarre.
I was going to say, if you have to try and explain things away, it's impossible, but they're an experience.
I mean, they're all amazing, but I just like, Rachel is probably the one I'm closest to, so she'd be the one I'd recommend talking to. Cool. And then the other person, if you have time, would be Gemma Banks, who makes costumes for us sometimes. So
yeah, that would be amazing.
So she used to work with Julian, who's Jackie Potato, and then Julian does make us costumes, still makes a lot of costumes for us, but Gemma does, and she does like Sync the Pink costumes and most of their panto costumes. But she's just had, not just their 7 months, just had twins.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's got twin boys who are 7 months old. She would be amazing to talk to.
In that case, I've probably admired a lot of her work from afar.
Yes, you probably have.
There was a Jackie Potato had an amazing dress that was a giant bag of crisps, a sparkly bag of crisps that said wankers instead of walkers.
Oh, right, amazing.
Yeah, maybe just that was stuck in my mind. So, yeah, definitely need to talk to her. I feel like Liv has really raised the bar for a first birthday party there. Next week is the last episode of this first season of The Dorothy Project, and we have an amazing guest to close the show. I can't wait for you to hear it. We're then going to take a little break, and I'd love to hear who you think I should talk to for season two. I definitely want to explore the ball scenes in London, and hey, why not Paris and New York? I want to finally meet some queens of colour. But should I find some more historical Dorothys? Women from the world of politics? Explore beyond London? Let me know. Tweet me at Dorothy_podcast or leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. You know what? Do that anyway. See you next week.